Welcome to the Moneyball Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Glorikian. This series is all about the data-driven transformation of the healthcare and life sciences landscape. Each episode, we dive deep through one-on-one interviews with leaders in the new cost-conscious, value-based healthcare economy. We look at the challenges and opportunities they're facing and their predictions for the years to come. My guest today is John Glasser, who is the Senior Vice President of Population Health at Cerner. Cerner is a health IT company that is one of the largest suppliers of electronic health record systems in the United States. John joined Cerner in 2015 as part of the Siemens Health Services acquisition, where he was the Chief Executive Officer. Prior to Siemens, John was Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Partners Healthcare. He also previously served as Vice President of Information Systems at Brigham and Women's Hospital. John received his PhD from the University of Minnesota. He has written over 200 articles and 3 books on the strategic application of IT in healthcare, including the most widely used textbook on the topic, Healthcare Information Systems, A Practical Approach for Healthcare. John is on the faculty of the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, the Medical University of Southern Carolina, the School of Biomedical Informatics at the Texas Health Science Center, and the Harvard School of Public Health. John focuses on strategic relationships with Cerner clients and advancing Cerner's population health solutions and services. John, welcome to Moneyball Medicine. It's great to have you here.
Harry, it's a pleasure.
John, tell me, what does it mean to be Vice President of Population Health? What is population health?
Well, it's a fuzzy term in some ways, but basically the idea is that there are organizations that say I'm accountable for the health care and the health of a group of people. It might be an employer who says I'm responsible for my employees, or the state Medicaid department, or a health care provider who has a series of lives attributed to them, or a health plan. But the point is, they're accountable. And so they need a series of tools and technologies that help them manage health and manage health care. This is analytics to see, you know, who's receiving what care, how costly is it. This is a series of care management to the degree they need someone to help them navigate the care process or social determinants. So anyway, at the end of the day, accountable organizations need technology to help them fulfill their obligations to those who they are to serve. And that's what population health IT stuff intends to do.
You know, medicine has been historically based on a fee-for-service model where you're paid on what you do. And now that we've seen sort of a shift, not as much as I'd like to see, but a shift towards value-based medicine, in other words, paying providers based on outcomes, do you see what you're doing or the business model sort of shifting towards how we do what we do?
Yeah, I think, Harry, we're in the early stages still of an extraordinary change in the business model of delivering healthcare. And it runs along a couple of different dimensions, so to speak. One is we're moving from reactive sick care to proactive management of health. So, you know, you show up, we'll fix you, to we got to make sure that you remain healthy. So that's one dimension. The second dimension is fragmented, where you go here for this type of care, there for that type of care, to this integrated continuum of care that occurs across. So we manage you throughout all the steps that need to be taken to, you know, replace your hip, for example. The third is moving from volume, or rewarded for volume, to where you're rewarded for quality and efficiency. And then last but not least is a shift from where we're centered on the clinician to where we're centered on the patient. So these four dimensions represent an extraordinary shift in business model. And I think, frankly, you could argue that the business model shift that healthcare is undergoing now is the most profound business model shift of any industry in the last 100 years. You look across transportation, telecommunications, and all financial services, et cetera. Now, business model shifts are hard, and they take time to play through. So I suspect that we will be spending decades, frankly, to make this particular shift occur and to occur well. So population health and other technologies are being brought to the table as organizations prepare for this future that awaits all of them.
Well, I think it's interesting, right? I mean, every once in a while, it sort of strikes me. I think it's because I've been in the business for such a long period of time. Is every other industry has been digitizing or measuring for forever? It seems like, and it seems like for us, it really hasn't been that long. I mean, if you think before the Reinvestment and Recovery Act, and you walked into a doctor's office, the entire wall would be paper. And so I think digitization has only been eight years maybe on a grand scale.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Harry. We're not as far along as other industries have. Now you have to be a little careful because the degree to which digitization will occur or to which it will be impactful varies. So organized religion has not been digitized and unlikely to be to any material degree. Similarly, the legal profession has to a degree, but at the end of the day, when you have a sort of cohort of people who are experts and whose knowledge is really the asset here, it's hard to digitize that. You can digitize a lot of stuff surrounding them, but to digitize the smart financial planner or the smart lawyer or the smart doctor. It's just challenging. So, but that being said, we are late. Now, I think in a way, sometimes healthcare gets accused of being behind, you know, as if it's full of a bunch of buttonheads who didn't know any better while their colleagues in retail are leapfrogging them. So, well, you know, there are buttonheads in healthcare, but by and large, they're pretty darn smart. They have made perfectly rational economic decisions based on the business model at the time. So if I'm rewarded for volume, I don't need all this other IT stuff. I just need to keep the beds filled. And the clinic schedule filled. So I'm investing like a perfectly rational person would do. Now we'll see that shift as that occurs. But nonetheless, there's been decades of non-investment because the economics didn't warrant it.
That begs the question of what have been the challenges that the healthcare industry has faced with respect to this digitization of data?
Well, I think there's a number of challenges, Harry. One is the range and complexity of the data is just off the charts. So if you say, well, how would I describe a person and their phenotype and all the different types of data that we brought together? It's a much more complex record than your financial record. And now we're going to add to it by saying, golly, we really understand the social determinants that influence you, and we really need to understand how to motivate you, and we really need to understand your genome. And so we have this incredibly complex set of data that comes to be. The second thing that is, as a knowledge base, it probably has few knowledge bases which are as challenging to master. One of the ways you can see that is if you go back 40 years ago and see how many specialties were recognized by the American Board of Medical Specialties, roughly a dozen. You say, well, how many are recognized today? Roughly 100. Well, why does that happen? Because the knowledge base expands and becomes so challenging, you got to increasingly narrow what we expect a human being to master. The third is you have these very complex processes that occur. This is not manufacturing the hospital. People show up, they have complications, they go south, all this kind of stuff. They have to be able to sort of manage the workflow on an ad hoc basis. So I think it's this complicated data world, complicated knowledge world, complicated work process world. And then last but not least, so when I was in graduate school, Harry, I was an organization theorist. And one of the things you notice is that for sociologists, hospitals are the most studied organizational form of all time because sociologists can't figure out how they work. They're too complicated. Parallel power structures, doctors and administration, lots of committees, etc. Anyway, the whole thing is, one of the reasons I think healthcare is behind in IT, partly because the economics didn't warrant it, but partly you say it's arguably the most complex arena to apply IT that we've ever had. And so that's hard. It's just very challenging to get apps that work effectively in this complexity.
Interesting. It's funny because I think to myself, sometimes it's a product of the way the system paid itself that caused some of these shifts to happen where in other sciences, we come up with a way of organizing the information about what we need to work with because we're looking for a certain outcome that we're trying to measure. And where you're being sort of remunerated based on what you do, not what the outcome is, that rubric of organizing is sort of becomes looser in a sense. So helping this along, I mean, we hear so much about artificial intelligence, the analytics, machine learning. I mean, the definitions are, the words are keep expanding, it seems like. Where do you see whichever term, the AI, the machine learning, the analytics, and the electronic health record system sort of intersecting, and what does that look like? Do you have some examples?
Yeah, Harry, I think, I mean, stepping back a little bit, one of the things I find interesting about IT is about every decade, a class of technology arrives that changes the world. So you go to the 60s was the mainframe, the 70s was the mini computer, the 80s was a network personal computer, the 90s was the web, the year 2000 was the mobile device. You know, the iPhone debuted in 2007. You say, well, what is it this decade? And I say, well, frankly, I think it's this broad umbrella called AI that will change the world, just as the others have changed the world. And just like the others took time to change the world, so will this. Now, it's this broad term in a way you can get all hung up about what AI really means and all that stuff. But I think, frankly, you say, listen, it's the whole field of advanced analytics applied. Now, in a way, there's sort of we see sort of four broad arenas in which you would apply this. One is determination of structure. So you say the machine is reading an image and saying, we got to, you know, this is what's going on here. You know, whether it's an eye disease with your eyes or a tumor or whatever, or the machine is looking at a pattern and saying, listen, these drugs are hurting people. You can see this in the pattern, you know, or treatment A is better than treatment B. So there's a creation of structure out of this mess, frankly, that we have. So that's one category. The second is increasing contextual awareness. So it says, okay, John Glasser's taking care of Mrs. Smith. The machine says, I know what's going on with Mrs. Smith. I got a record. I know how to present conditions. I know her preferences. I know John's preferences, et cetera. I know what the evidence says. I know what the payment is. And so I'm going to present data to John in that context. Here's what you should pay attention to. Here's likely your next series of actions, et cetera. I'm going to shape myself to this particular interaction. And sometimes we see this on retail sites with a sort of attempt to shape. The third is I'm going to do operational flow. And, you know, an example of this, I remember my days at Siemens, was the smart city. So the city's saying, we got a traffic jam on the main street, so I'm going to alter the light sequence to sort of move it along a little bit here. And so in a process sense, you say, the machine says, I got to take Mr. Smith down to get his radiology exam. I can tell that there's a 30-minute wait in radiology. I can see he needs his blood drawn. The phlebotomist is one floor below. I'm going to let the phlebotomist play through, draw his blood, and then I'm going to send it down to radiology. It's sort of choreographing a process. And then last but not least, it is the sort of clinical decision aids. You know, it's the readmission algorithm. It is the thing that says, you know, this person is likely to be better off in this type of skill facility versus that. So a lot of the predictive stuff, you know, comes in there. So you look at all that and say, wow, there's some real power here. And a lot of that will leverage EHR data. And particularly, golly, if we can bring it all together and if we can deal with some of the, you know, the mess that is in there and if we get better at social context, et cetera. So I think we're learning, Harry, and it's an exciting time. And there's, you know, the gazillion startups. There's some big gorillas, you know, the Googles of the world and Amazons of the world, Microsofts, et cetera, et cetera. We're all playing in this thing. So anyway, we're in the early stages of this decade of this very profound change, which will, in a way, preserve the EHR as the core. I mean, you still got to collect the data. Docs and nurses still have to work with something. I mean, they're interacting with something that goes on. But the nature of that interaction will be quite different in the years ahead.
Do you see the EHR? Do you see this integrating with the EHR? Do you see the EHR becoming the data lake that something reaches into and then does an analysis for a specialization? How do you see this melding?
All of the above. I think in some cases, the intelligence will be part and parcel of the EHR because of nothing else, speed. You know, so when you enter an order and the thing comes back and says, what are you, serious? There's got to be a better way to do this. You know, that will be part and parcel of this. On the other hand, what you see, for example, in population health is you extract data from lots of different EHRs because generally regions have the, plus you bring in the claims and the devices and all this other stuff. And one of the things that increasingly the population health will be is that I got to keep Harry healthy. So, and I need to pull together enough that I can characterize him, you know, clinically characterize him, socially characterize him, how do I motivate him, et cetera. Now, having characterized Harry, what's the plan to keep Harry healthy? So I got to come up with a plan. And then I got to monitor the plan. It says, geez, you know, all of a sudden he stopped taking his drugs, or all of a sudden his blood sugar is wobbly, et cetera. So the plan has to alter itself. So, oh, I think we need to do something. That's all intelligence. You know, the intelligence of rationalizing the data, the intelligence of saying, I'm going to infer a plan, and the intelligence says that I have to monitor. So there'll be this layer that sits on top of EHRs. And I think, frankly, you know, as people begin to say, I'm going to bring my data into my mobile device and integrate it there, there will be intelligence applied there. You know, that's quite local or cloud-based, but specific to the device, guiding you or me in decisions we might make.
What have you seen from these startup companies or new things that are going on? But what do you see that's really exciting? Like what sort of application area do you see where it's improved an outcome for a patient and lowered the cost? So in that sense.
Yeah, we see, I mean, there's lots of spot examples. And one of the things that's kind of interesting about this whole arena is at times we talk about the sort of general purpose intelligence. That's kind of the Watson thing, or HAL, you know, in the 2001 Space Odyssey. But in fact, the real powerful stuff's really quite targeted. You know, it's the intelligence in a Siemens MRI that says part 62 is failing. You know, get over here and fix it before it really fails, which is different from a part that says in your glucometer, your blood sugars are bouncing around, do something, which is different from, geez, if we don't do something now, you're going to be readmitted within 40 hours. Anyway, very targeted intelligence here. So you see lots of neat examples. You see neat examples of sepsis algorithms that say, we've got to do something now before this, because you can go south in a hurry. We see neat examples on readmissions where they really do drop readmission rates. We can see examples where we say, rather than send this person to this skilled level of facilities upon discharge, send them to a lower or higher. And we see actually a third of the time decisions get changed. You know, be to the right place to go off and do this stuff. So, and we see examples of more effective ordering. We see examples where you can do post-market, you can really pick up signals in the data that says a drug's hurting people, or treatment A is better than treatment B. So you go through this range of things that are, wow, it's pretty darn neat to add up all this stuff. I think, Harry, one of the sort of, you know, there's some broad, big challenges that are out there. I'll give you an example of a broad, big one here. So when you look at an EHR and say, how many instances of medical knowledge are there in a typical EHR? I say, well, what's an instance of medical knowledge? Well, an order set, you know, a health maintenance reminder. You know, all are sort of instances of medical knowledge. In general, there's in excess of 100,000. Say, wow, you know, who's maintaining this stuff? I don't know. And what day was it recently up there? I don't know that either. So one of the challenges we have is we introduce all this intelligence into these systems and it just grows, this sort of body of knowledge. It becomes brittle, you know, because nobody's watching the store, so to speak there. So you say, wait a minute, how about if we have the machine watch? And the machine point out that this thing is updated and then actually look at the data, machine learning, and make the updates itself, et cetera. So you, in a way, you have machine healing and management of its content. And I say, wow, that's pretty neat. Frankly, we'll have to do something if this stuff isn't going to get brittle, break, and hurt somebody. But anyway, how we figure that out beats me. And I think that becomes one of those great challenges that confronts the industry, in addition to continue to find and leverage lots of very specific point examples of where the intelligence has really made a demonstrable gain, although quite focused gain.
So that begs the question of, I mean, there's got to be either new capabilities people need to learn, mm-hmm. or new people we need to hire that are going to get involved. But this, it seems like healthcare is going to be a booming area for jobs and new types of jobs that, or new skills that they're going to have to teach doctors in medical school just to be keep up with all of this. So what do you see as the opportunities?
Oh, I think there's lots of opportunities. And those young people and even mid-career people looking to shift here, healthcare and healthcare IT and informatics, data science, all that stuff is going to be a rich and fertile area for quite some time. So I think, Harry, they range from what I call the methods guys, you know, men and women who really understand how to apply different analytical techniques to make this stuff, and really quite, you know, a lot of you know, machine learning techniques and other types. So there's the methods people that I got to go on here. The second is a series of people who actually understand the clinical context. Because sometimes the methods people come up and the person in the clinical context says, no. And I'll give you an example. This goes way back when. We were looking at data on how you have the machine determine smoking status. You know, so can the machine go through and say, Harry's a smoker or non-smoker? And it gets complicated. Maybe you stopped 5 years ago or whatever it happened to be. And we were looking at one particular note and it said, smoking status unclear. And so, well, what does that mean? And the physician who was working with us said, that means the resident is tired and just didn't want to go down this rabbit hole and just wrote smoking status unclear. Well, you got to know the context to know that, these kinds of things. So we'll always have to have people who understand the milieu of what is going on here. The third is understand people who understand workflow. So where and how do I introduce this? You know, do I do this in the middle of the exam? Do I do it after the fact? Do I do it to the doctor? Do I do it to some staff in the, I mean, where do I fit this? And if I fit this, what do I want them to do? So you might have logic that says the social determinants indicate this person is in a nutritional wasteland. We got to deal with that. Okay, who does what? when that is informed. So there's a series of what is the process and the choreography that goes with it. And then last but not least, it is people who design stuff. You know, my wife recently bought a Volvo XC90. You know, just a side note here, if you said which has more lines of code, a high-end SUV, a 787, or the space station, the answer is a high-end SUV by factor two. Sheer lines of code, you know, to park correctly, avoid crashing somebody, to dim when other lights, you know, it's amazing here on these kinds of, you couldn't crash that thing if you wanted to. So the point is how do I help my wife or anybody with that bring the knowledge in and sort of, you know what to do, guide the interaction that is going on and these kinds of things. So I think there's between the methods people, the context people, the workflow people, and the computer human design people, there's lots of opportunities to do this. And then last but not least, obviously people who evaluate. So is it doing any good?
So that begs a question of, and looking at all the other industries, is when they've tried to apply these advanced machine learning applications, AI, etc., in their first go, they tried to obviously do what we always do, take it and meld it into my existing workflow. Mm-hmm. And they never seem to get the return that they were expecting. And then when you see them shift their workflow based on the power that the system provides, they seem to get much more. So how's that going to work in healthcare? Because we're pretty rigid in our workflows. So how do you see that influencing the workflow and what we learn?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we will iterate because, you know, there's a lot of smart people in this industry trying stuff, and they'll say, geez, I don't really know, but let's try it here. And they say, well, that, you know, we're off 15 degrees. And so you'll have to iterate. You know, I think one of the ways that organizations evolve is what I always refer to as short cycle learning. Try this tune, try that tune. I mean, just sort of short cycle their way into, you know, better to do this. In some ways, we do have rigid workflows, but on the other hand, what I think I find over my forever time in this industry is that if you help a caregiver save time or do a better job of delivering care, they'll adapt quite readily. Where they're not happy is if you cost them time, you know, or this, that, and the other. So, you know, subject to regulation and reimbursement because there's certain things you've got to do here. So I think we'll iterate and, you know, define novel ways of doing this kind of stuff. And frankly, one of the great things, you know, is learning from your colleagues, you know, about what did you try in your organization. So chief medical officers talking to chief medical officers and vendors learning from their clientele, et cetera. We'll get better at all this.
There's a lot of new entrants into the field, mm-hmm. right? You've got the Googles and you've got the Apples and the list is incredibly long of wellness companies sort of butting right up against the line there of regulated versus non-regulated care. Where do you see or Amazon's yeah. foray into this? Where do you see their impact to the system? And I don't want to say good or bad, but where, how do you see that changing things?
I think that's unclear to me is how that will evolve. And you see multiple threads. You know, you see a thread of, you know, health plans and providers fusing and merging. You know, you see the Walmarts making moves. You see the CVSs making moves. All, you know, so pharmacy and retail and health plans, they're all making moves in ways that are quite striking. And you see them trying to take out the middleman of the PBM by so there's this restructuring that is occurring. And it's not just in the sort of non-provider side of this thing. You know, a couple of years ago at Cerner, you know, maybe a decade ago, we would have said, well, what's a large health system? We said, well, about $5 billion in revenue, annual revenue. And say, well, today, what would you say? Oh, about $20 billion in revenue. So they're just, the bigger are getting bigger in lots of ways here. So even the provider side is restructuring these very large health systems with a whole lot of regional systems that are going on. So you have all that, and that's on the non-IT side, let alone the tech giants, you know, coming in, let alone the consumer guys coming in, some of which are tech giants, let alone the traditional EHR vendors, Cerner being one, Epic being another, Allscripts, et cetera, let alone, to your point, a gazillion startups of remarkable talent, some on the consumer side, some on the analytics side, you know, all over the place. And you say, well, how will it all settle out? Good question. How will that all settle out? So I don't know that we know in a way what that will look like. I think some things are clear. You know, one of which is you could poo-poo the tech giants, say, well, they tried that before and it turned poorly for them, it'll turn poorly for them again. Don't count on it. The world is a different place. The technology is better. They've got smarter, et cetera. The other is if you said the traditional boundaries, you know, providers on one side, health plans on another, pharmacies, et cetera, those boundaries are blurring fast. And so you see that in providers getting into Medicare Advantage and a variety of other stuff. So I think a lot of it, if I were a health system, so what do I do about all this stuff? I said, well, I'd start forming relationships with a lot of people who may have been traditional antagonists in the past, you know, the health plan, the retail guys. And they're learning just as you're learning and starting to go through all of that kind of stuff here. And I think, you know, it becomes harder. You turn to a core vendor and you say, well, geez, you know, Cerner or Epic or anywhere, what do you think of all these guys? You know, help me navigate this technology stuff, or consulting firms who can go off and do all this stuff. Anyway, very complicated, very confusing time. And I think the other, sometimes, you know, we get into this area is, geez, healthcare straddling two business models, the fee-for-service and the value-based care, you know, geez, what a pain in the butt. It is a pain in the butt. How long will it last? Decades. It's not one of these 2 years and it's over and done. So settle in for a multi-year period of forming that will go on across the board.
That I'm sure that doesn't make physicians or anybody listening to that.
I could be wrong.
Happy.
We'll find out.
So, you know, as I look forward in the next, God, I hate even saying like, you know, 3, 5, 10 years, there's a lot of digital disruption coming. I try to stay up on all the bleeding edge, which moves into tech very quickly, whether it's AI, dare I say blockchain, virtual and augmented reality, things like that. What do you see having impact on the healthcare arena?
Yeah, I think it's hard to do that. I mean, and at the end of the day, for me, you know, one of the things is you step back and say, for any particular class of technologies, at a very fundamental level, tell me what it does, and then I will tell you whether I think that's important. So I'll give you an example. What does flight do? So, well, it enables you to get from point A to point B in a lot shorter period of time without the infrastructure. You don't need railroads. You need a landing strip at either end. I say, oh, that's pretty remarkable. I could see where that's valuable to me. What does refrigeration do? It allows perishable things to last longer. And you say, well, geez, why would I do that? Well, I'm moving pharmaceuticals across the globe. That matters a lot. And so you step back at a very fundamental level and say, why is this? What is it and why is it profound? So I, for example, look at blockchain. You say, what is it? It's a new way of doing accounting that has the ability perhaps to remove the middleman like the bank or the law office, et cetera. Do I think that will fundamentally alter healthcare? No, I don't. Do I think we'll see it? Sure. You know, we'll see it as people do credentials for doctors, et cetera. So now on the other hand, you say, what about this intelligence? Say, well, geez, it really could help a series of decisions, contextual aware, structure of data. Is that a big deal? Absolutely, it's a big deal. Do I see the fact that you and I might have technology on us, you know, our mobile device that can communicate with us, knows where we are, et cetera. Is that going to be a big deal? Absolutely a big deal. So I think it's hard, but the trick is to step back and say at a very fundamental level, what does it do? And the answer, you'll get an answer, and the salience of that answer will vary by industry. Blockchain may be more important for financial services than it is for healthcare, than it is for, you know, other religions, et cetera. But even when you do that, you say, okay, so I think consumer stuff is really important, but golly, there's a zillion companies. How do I sort through wheat through chaff? That's still an issue, you know, even if you believe the area is really critical.
So what other topics or subject areas, I don't want to say keep you up at night, but are very salient to what's happening in this whole digitization or movement of healthcare in this direction?
Well, I think I think we have to be careful here because I do believe it's a profound business model change, and I do believe it takes time for those to occur. You know, if you look, for example, Harry, last year, what percent of retail in the U.S. was done over the web versus in a store? And the answer is 12%. You say, wow, you know, how long we've been at this? Well, you know, Amazon Incorporated 1994, Google 1998. So 20 years later, it's 12%. And you say, well, that's not fair because gasoline isn't sold over the internet. You factor out some of that stuff and you say, but still, in some industries, it's been devastating, you know, consumer electronics. But other industries, it hasn't. Groceries are still largely untouched by the internet, you know, jewelry largely untouched, et cetera. So it takes long periods of time and differential impact. It's not a universal impact that comes across the board here. So I think big business model change is going to take time. We have some extraordinary technology coming. So what is critical, when there's no inherent reason to believe it's all going to work out well. You know, you sometimes look, golly, it's going to turn out. That's not a given here at all. You know, there is, and you can see it in the EHR burnout issue of the doc. We could very well drive a whole bunch of people out of the business at a time when certainly I am beginning to need them as I decay slowly but surely in the years ahead here. So we could break it in some ways or adverse. So what matters a lot is that the industry, with all the competitive juices that flow around here, is that it learns from each other and guides us. Yes, there's businesses here, but there's also, you know, a moral and a civic responsibility we collectively have that it turn out well as we go through this. So the thing that I sleep pretty well at night, but the thing I worry about is that we don't learn and learn together to make this thing as effective and as efficient and as highly tuned as possible. And for God's sakes, we don't break it along the way.
So where do you see, I mean, I always think to myself, some of the big shifts have happened because of the way that government has influence those shifts. In other words, if we kept paying everybody based on everything they did, they'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
But you know, we came up with this thing called the Affordable Care Act. We said, well, you know, maybe we should pay based on outcomes. How much do you believe the government is playing a role in this shift versus competitive dynamics, which I don't believe necessarily exist in healthcare?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the government's the single most potent actor in all of this. You know, it accounts for half the payment, you know, between Medicare and Medicaid. It accounts, so how it decides to pay has enormous consequence. It is also, because it is government, has the ability to absorb being the first mover disadvantage. You know the free rider effect. And so government can make those moves, bear the free rider effect because it's government. Whereas any individual player, first of all, isn't big enough to do that, but then, you know, it suffers that consequence. So it is the big gorilla, and it can deal with the first mover disadvantage. Now, it has challenges in that it is a political animal. It is surrounded by Congress. It is surrounded by elected officials who come and go. So, you know, it's going to get buffeted by those particular winds and all the stuff that makes politics complicated that we go through. And it's got a big task. It's trying to figure out how in the world you take a country of 330 million people who are very diverse and sort of satisfy them all. And I remember spending time at ONC, and I thought, golly, meaningful use. You know, what does meaningful use mean? You get 3,000 ideas, and you can only take 12. So this is they have a tough job to go off and to do this. Whatever they do, the industry will follow. The payers will follow, the plans will follow, et cetera. So that's on the top of the regulatory. So, for example, the FDA say, we're going to loosen up, you know, the process by which you get new stuff approved. It has an enormous influence on whether that goes on or not, or, you know, advances occur within biomedical discovery. Last but not least, for example, on HIPAA, what's kind of striking to me is HIPAA's 20 years old. It covers providers, health plans, and intermediaries, but it doesn't cover Amazon, and it doesn't cover Apple. So government has decisions to make about the privacy context, you know, what it does or doesn't do. Anyway, I think it is the most significant actor that exists in the landscape today, and as it moves, so will the industry.
Any closing thoughts or anything that you think, you know, the listeners would want to hear about in these shifts before we sign off here?
No, I think, first of all, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to spend a little time with you, Harry, and also with those who are listening into this stuff. I think for all of you, we are, as you've probably gathered from my comments and perhaps comments of others, it's a remarkable time. To get through it will take our collective intelligence, hard work, and thoughtfulness. And so I look forward to working with everybody who's listening to this stuff to let's go make this thing happen. Because at the end of the day, the consequences are real. I mean, I think about this every now and then, Harry. You know, if you go pick a hospital that's near us. There are people, the people who are in there are there's somebody's spouse, there's somebody's parents, there's somebody's siblings, etc. This is real people who are loved by others going through a bad time, unless they're giving birth to a kid, which is usually a pretty good time. And so it's very real. It's very personal at a level, and we ought to recognize the magnitude of that and the importance of that as we collectively work our fannies off to make this thing as good as we can be and learn as we go through this. Anyway, I feel like a sermon, but nonetheless, go forth and make this world a better place. We all need it and look forward to it.
Thank you very much for the time, John.
Thank you, Harry.
And that's it for this episode. Join me in the next episode where I speak to Lee Binder, the president and CEO of the Leapfrog Group. We discuss how data transparency helps inform healthcare decisions by putting the right information in the hands of patients and employers. If you enjoyed Moneyball Medicine, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It is greatly appreciated. Hope you join us next time. Until then, farewell.